Yeah, my name is Sam. I'm a taxi driver for 10 years in Sydney Metro. I'm listening to radio all the time. All the time listen to these ads, but these lousy ads make me crazy. You listen to this podcast, you know, think you know everything, but use Eardrum. They know how to make ads. You're in marketing. You know where to find Eardrums. Just go and find them and get them to do your ads. You can cut and do that.
Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored this week by Eardrum. I'm Tim Burrows. And I've been chatting to Paul Williams and Rob Belgiovanni from BWM. I'm Tim Burrows. Today's hangout is sponsored by Eardrum with us today. Rob Belgiovanni, Paul Williams, two of the three initials of BWM. Welcome along, guys.
Thanks.
So we should probably start by just looking back at 2012. Pretty big year for the agency, a few changes, not least, you're independent again. How does it feel?
Pretty good to me.
It feels great to me too, you know, especially after 3 weeks holiday. It feels even better. Though it does make me aware that we've got to get out there and pay the mortgage.
So for those who don't know the background, you originally sold to Photon, which became an Aero. For a time that was your owner. You've since bought your way out of that. Yeah. How was working for the man?
The man, are you talking about Tim Hughes? Or are you talking about Matthew Mel Hewitt?
Tim Hughes.
Or Rob Belgiovanni?
Yeah, Matt. At times your boss, at times your rival, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was an odd feeling, actually. It was an odd feeling, but only in as much as we'd been literally head-to-head competitors for, I guess, 16 years, because they started pretty much at the same time. But it was good. You know, Matt's a very smart operator. I learned a lot from him in the time that I worked with him, and hopefully I shared a few lessons with him too. But he's a good guy, and I wish him best with Photon.
And does it feel differently when you're owned by someone else?
There's no question that having your ass fully on the line is quite motivating in all the ways you would think. You know, ultimately, something shifted probably from the minute it was announced. Something changed. I don't know what it was. It's an atmospheric thing. But, you know, when I'm joking around with friends on the weekend, I'll say, you know, in the end of the day, you know, suddenly it's your money again, it's your team again, it's your ass, and you want it to work. And so there's a sense of commitment and fun that comes with running your own business that we all know about, and that comes back. And suddenly you feel, you know, more enthused and more committed to the business.
At the same time, I guess there's a level of responsibility. There's a lot of people out there whose jobs rely on you. You know, you lose a piece of business, it matters. You win a piece of business, it matters.
And we've got a fantastic team, which, you know, we've assembled over that 16 years. And the most encouraging aspect of buying the business back was the incredibly positive perspective we got, not only from staff, but also from clients. Just some of the most fabulous notes, very supportive. And as we've discovered recently, there's a real commitment to Australian indie agencies because some new business pitches that we've had the good fortune to be included on recently were very specifically targeting independently owned agencies, which did surprise us a bit, I think, from some quarters. You know, I didn't think that would be as important as it is to some clients, but it is. Overall, the experience has been great, really, all round. You know, good senior people, happy, and great clients. Happy with that news.
So, Paul, you're the money man. One of the reported numbers was that you bought the agency back for about $7.5 million. Mm-hmm. Now, presumably, Enero owed you a chunk of money or was going to. Did you actually have to part with much in the way of actual cash? Or
well, they owned 51% of the agency, and we owned 49%. They owed us a chunk of cash, which is fairly well documented. So we were able to work out a pretty fair deal for the business. Given what it was worth and given what they owed us.
So did you get it back for a song?
I think we paid a fair price, and I think Enero would say the same thing.
Okay, let's talk about some of your key clients now. Now, for years, you were known as the Telstra agency.
You
lost them during the Enero years. Does that create new opportunities, or is there still a hole there?
Well, no, it's interesting. You know, the Telstra thing was something that sort of dogged our agency reputation for quite some time, if you like, and you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Telstra was a fantastic client, big volume, got to make a lot of work, and we made a lot of good work with Telstra and enjoyed that reputation. But because of the size of the account, it swamps perception of everything else that you do. And we were quite keen to make sure that everyone understood that the agency actually had of a sort of a revenue base of 25 million, which is a not insubstantial agency. Clients like Sanitarium, and we have the pretty much the whole roster there, Weet-Bix, Up and Go, Energize, So Good, Simplot, we have John West, Legos, Birdseye, Edgel, to name just but a few, NIB, Kmart, we just picked up Bank of Queensland. So a raft of different clients across the different categories. So we'd very much like to see ourselves not as a telco agency, although we have now filled that gap with IONET.
And not relying on any one big client.
Well, that was the thing. We actually got to a point where Telstra was so enormous, we scooped up so much of that business over the 10 years that we were working with them, that it came to represent almost 40% of our revenue. And of course, you don't turn clients away when they say, we want you to take on more. But on the other hand, it swells and it swells and it swells. And you suddenly realize, crikey, this is scary. Now no one client represents more than about 16-17%.
And Rob with Telstra, I guess the one that people always still talk about is Rabbits, the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to top that, do you think?
Look, I think we will top it. And I think we have topped it in some ways. And we'll talk a bit more about that shortly, I'm sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people go through their entire careers without an iconic piece of work. And I think that ultimately for BWM, the father and son idea, which admittedly the most well known was the launch commercial, you know, why did they build the Great Wall of China? But obviously that ran over 7-8 years across every possible media platform. So it had some phenomenal results associated with it as well. So overall, to create an idea that runs and lives and breathes and is loved for 8 years is pretty rare. So, you know, you've got to be happy with that. You know, we were very proud of that work, not to mention, you know, Call Mum, which certainly got Australians talking, which is what BWM, you know, have as our sort of mantra, if you like.
I remember there was one Call Mum execution. This is going a bit narrow. With John Jarrett, the ex-Wolf Creek guy. And I always found that quite sinister for that reason.
And there was a lot of consternation about casting him or not, because he plays the dad of the school in the most benign role, you know. But a lot of people did come back and go, oh, that's that creepy ad with the Wolf Creek guy. And he, yeah, sorry, we cast a mass murderer in that one. But, hey, you know, kind of, he's a good actor. You know, you do get that, obviously, from time to time. Most of the great Australian actors have done some sort of film to get that reputation, except for the dad in the Great Wall of China series, of course, he was a postman, right. And that was his first ever piece of work. And I understand he's actually been able to retire off that 8 years of income. So good on him. He did an amazing job. And in fact,
casting is something people don't talk about very often, actually.
No, that's right.
But yeah, talk me through the casting process for an ad. You know, where at what stage do you hand it over to the production company, for instance? How much involvement would you have as a creative?
Look, I attribute the director of that first idea, the first Great Wall of China ad, was Vicky Blanche, who is, I think, a good 70% of the reason that what was a pretty good script ended up becoming an iconic piece of Australian advertising. And it was Vicky's idea to cast people who hadn't acted before. She did that at some of the smaller Melbourne suburban theatre groups. And in fact, in this instance, the dad, Patrick, had only really been to one or two lessons at the local church, church hall drama class. And Simon went up and he, you know, rolled up for it. It did what he does, which is not much. And he was picked for that gig. But it was really Vicky's commitment to making it look authentic and real that I think really hit a nerve for Australians overall with that piece of work.
And more generally with casting, is it just a relatively small pool here in Australia? You know, I think of, I forget his last name, is it Ben Woods, the guy who was early in the Earn Co ads? You see him all the time.
Yeah, you do now, yeah.
Is there just too small a pool of actors to choose from? Or are agencies just not original enough in how they cast?
There is a small pool, for sure. If you want, great actors, then you've got a pretty small pool to choose from. If you want to work with people that haven't acted before, as we did with Great Wall of China, it's a lot easier. But that requires a director with that kind of commitment, as Vicky had, you know, because I always attribute her for a good 60, 70% of what that particular idea became. You know, she did a fantastic job, not only casting it, but shooting it and directing people that hadn't acted before. Marvellous.
Another big piece of news for the agency is buying Sputnik, the digital agency. Paul, I guess you were probably the one at BWM who left that deal.
Yeah.
How did it come about in the first place?
Well, it's interesting, you know, when we handled the Telstra business, we had inside our agency about 35 specialists, digital specialists. Obviously, with an account like Telstra, you've got to have that capability. And as we sort of downsize, we realized that, you know, although the philosophy of the agency was to deliver a full 360 integrated mix across channels, in terms of specialists, we were depleted in that number. So it made a lot of sense for us to look for opportunities. And as it happened, we partnered with Sputnik on two core clients, Sanitarium and GE Money. So we got talking to the local management at the time, a little while back, and they were already in conversation with Kit, who were the owners, about a management buyout. So we kind of got involved in that sort of stream of conversation.
Because Kit were having their own financial
Kit
problems.
Kit were in all sorts of trouble. Yeah, actually, we had no idea the size of Kit.
Do you reckon you could have driven the price down?
I think maybe we could have done better. But, it's all in hindsight. But
how much did you pay?
I don't know how to say that.
Nice
fair price.
In the low millions, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. We'd consider a fair price and an attractive price because already we'd formed a very good allegiance with the managing director, Nick Lewis, and Dan Robertson, who's in Sydney.
5 million?
Yeah. Pocket money for you.
So a little bit more than 5 million.
Yeah.
Nice try. I told you I wouldn't reveal the piggy bank.
Now, one of the things you pointed there is the multi-channel world. We're there, it's arrived. Yeah. What does that actually mean for agencies? What is their role in that world?
Well, you gonna have a go or I'm gonna go there?
I don't mind, we can both have a go. Do you wanna go first?
You can go first.
Okay. In the end, the role that an agency plays is managing a brand and creating advocacy for that brand. The reality is, it's irrelevant where, you know, what kind of media you're in, which channel you're on. At the end of the day, we need to be wherever the core most likely people to purchase or want that service are. And as we all know, now we sit at home, usually with an iPad or a laptop on our lap whilst watching television, and we cross-pollinate between those three. I'm talking about one particular example when you're sitting at home. So ultimately, I guess we're looking for ideas that A, leverage a reaction between those three particular channels, but more importantly, the primary shift that's occurring is that the surge of social interaction effectively creates a unique environment where most people are engaged in social media talking about their lives or telling their life story, in the case of, say, Facebook. A curated life story, but it's definitely everyone's perfectly curated life story. It's our role is to make our brand relevant and desirable in the context of that space, which is a big call when you've got, you know, something about your best friend's baby, something else about your other best friend's wedding, and suddenly you want to put your client in the middle of that. You better think long and hard about how you're going to do that in a way that's not going to be instantly rejected. What's fantastic is if you can find a way where it's not instantly rejected, which we have, then what you effectively get is advocacy within people's networks. And it's that advocacy within the network that actually triggers the strongest reaction to buying a product, because ultimately we trust our friends a lot more than we trust advertising or brands or, for that matter, politicians. So really what we want to try and do these days overall, I'm touching that microphone, what we want to do these days overall is create an idea or develop an idea that creates advocates within the community who then pass that experience on to their friends, who then pass it on to their friends, and that's how you get that exponential reaction to social media. That's kind of like our primary goal. You know, whereas once upon a time, it was the job of, say, a TV ad to flog stuff. And to some degree, it still is. But you get a more powerful reaction, I think, if you use the primary media, the traditional media, to spike a conversation, and then you create advocates, and then effectively you're turning the community into a sales force for your brands and services. And that's when you really get phenomenal results for a little less of a media investment.
Well, speaking of social media, do tweet your question under the hashtag AskBWM. I'll be checking those off on the iPad to see what's coming up there. Paul, going back to that same question, is it possible actually for, or necessary for, a brand to be there in every single channel?
Well, you know what? I think, many of us have fallen into the trap now of trying to do everything in this sort of complicated, multi-fragmented world. And what I'm trying to urge our people to do now is to get back to simplified, pure thinking. Simplify. Try and do the things and advise your clients to do the things that they should be doing rather than what they could be doing. And there's so much conversation now of experimenting with this and experimenting with that. But I do think sometimes we're at risk of losing focus on doing some of the basics really, really well. And I think it's true to say, you look what's been going on with TV and the different forms of TV over the last 3 or 4 years, you could have been accused of being a dinosaur if you said, actually, get back to doing TV extremely well. But now look what's happening. TV is are powering ahead. It's in a renewed form, multiple integrated screens. Social TV is kicking in at a whole new level. So it's an exciting new world. So getting back to core skills and simplified purity of what you should be doing, I think, is what we're trying to urge our people to do.
Yeah, certainly the last thing in the world you want to do is have your clients be specifically pre-booking across every possible channel, hoping that the idea you're going to create is going to be as effective in every channel, which it really is. So I think you have to be very careful that you don't try and fill every media hole, as opposed to saying, well, what can we do brilliantly with this idea in which channel, that such that it creates a conversation or gets people going, wow, that was amazing, I'm going to tell someone about that. You couldn't possibly hope to do that across every channel every time. So it's just getting very selective about that.
Okay, well, here's a question, I guess, about one channel. A little bit of context before I give the question. So campaign that you've worked with on John West, outdoor billboard at Bondi, invites people to upload their photo of them taking on the bear. And I think that's an Instagram promotion, or also Twitter as well, or just Instagram.
Wherever we could get it.
Right, okay. Anyway, the question, why do you think the John West hashtag Be Your Best 2013 Instagram campaign at Bondi isn't really working? So I'm not sure if you, first of all, I'll ask you to do, whether you agree with the premise of the question that it isn't working, but secondly, if not, what have you learned from it?
If it's not working, I'm not aware of that. And, look, that's possible, although I seriously doubt it. But there can be a number of reasons for that. Could be placement, could be the notion of the idea. In the end, the John West bear is a powerful icon and very difficult to move away from. And ultimately, the more we can promote that animal in the context of that brand, the more the brand is inherently foremost in people's minds. And ultimately, that's the objective of that campaign. So, some things take a little longer to pick up than others. So, we'll just wait and see for John West. The main thing, though, is that we're using the primary icon in a way that creates a sort of slightly higher level of interest than you would normally get.
I suppose I wondered when I wrote about that campaign, my first thought was whether, and this is perhaps...
The bear, do we move away from the bear?
But also, I suppose sometimes just in advertising worlds where, brands are obviously very, very familiar with their own icons and what they're about.
Yeah.
I almost wonder whether that campaign assumed a level of knowledge and understanding from the audience, from the public, that not everybody would have, perhaps.
Yeah. Look, we know that if you are going to, there's a few icons associated with John West. That is a beautiful looking fish, a fisherman wearing yellow overalls, and a bear. If you can find a fresh thing to do with those three, you have a John West ad. If you change any one of those three, then you are perhaps risking a slight reduction in accessibility and recognition of the brand. And that's a risk that we, nor Simplot, were prepared to take. And I think, you know, just as well, because I've heard a lot of people talk about the John West bear ad. I've heard very few people talk about an ad with a bear and a fisherman. You know, the brand is synonymous, so it's working very well for them.
Let's take another question from social media. We've touched on this, but I think there's a bit more we can say. Pasco would be interested to hear anything that you guys want to share about your plans for Sputnik. What are their strengths? What midterm plans regarding integration or otherwise?
Yeah, look, I think that's a work in progress. Obviously, we bought that business because it was a very robust business in its own right, some very strong client relationships, as well as some client synergies. We've got some very talented people there who we believe will be motivated by their shareholding position. And we've found that in our model, you know, that shareholding opportunity gives a lot of momentum and a lot of encouragement and motivation to businesses. So I think what we'll do at the moment, we'll keep the brands and management teams separate. Then we're going to house them, co-house them. And for those client opportunities whereby a fully integrated offer is desired by the client, Serbian, but we will let their leader relationships be driven by the Sputnik team, similarly with ours. And if there's a package of working together, then it can be put together. That's the way we'll do it. But it's a bespoke business, so we'll be conducting, you know, building bespoke solutions.
And for you, Rob, you'll be providing a creative lead across both businesses.
Yeah, look, ultimately, from a creative perspective, as we, I think very few people would disagree these days, it's quite powerful to have the creative development process be across the multiple skill sets. And having digital natives in the room always helps that process, and Sputnik is full of them. So it's kind of fun for us, you know, to, and we've got digital natives within the creative department as is, but it's always nice to have people who've been living and breathing digital and nothing else, cross-pollinating with the teams that have varying levels of expertise in that area. So it's kind of fun for us because in the end, you know, as I said earlier, we're working across every channel anyway, the core idea being to develop a powerful idea that gets people engaged. And the more people in the room that can think creatively about big ideas, the more enjoyable it is, and Sputnik's got plenty of that.
Question from Dave Nichols. Dave says, hi guys.
Hi Dave.
Will business finally pick up in 2013? And if so, what advantages will BWM have as an independent local shop?
Are you talking about business in general, or BWM business, or Sputnik business?
I suspect that Dave's talking about business for the industry as a whole.
Yeah.
I can't actually interrogate the question. Yeah. You have as much information as I have. But it's probably worth addressing it, but, you know, how things feel for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, look, I think cautious optimism, really. I mean, the economy is, you know, it's stable, if not, you know, with some nervous questions being asked about it. Most of our clients continue to invest confidently in their brands and their business, albeit many suffering pressures from their distribution partners. But, you know, the conversation with all of them is around driving preference and growth for brands. So I think provided you are providing quality offer, quality service, you'll do well in this business. You know, I can't think we're going to rely on generic growth for the industry. And I think as long as you say, you know, the game is going to be about share steal, and to do that, you've got to be at the top of your game, you'll probably fare okay.
Which actually links us to nicely to another question from Anonymous. BWM plan to reinvigorate a multi-award-winning brand / campaign following its acquisition of the Bank of Queensland account, which came in very late last year.
We picked up Bank of Queensland right at the end of last year, very competitive pitch, and we were delighted to win it. And we shan't be sharing any trade secrets at this particular point in time.
Did you win it on a big idea?
We did. Yeah, we did.
And when are we, can you say when we will see that in the market?
No. Probably not.
Okay. Who cracked the idea within the team? Was it you, Rob?
I'll tell you the truth on that. It was him.
I've got to say.
He's not one for telling people about himself.
I've heard that.
Look,
it was Deldre. He cracked it.
We had quite a hot team working on it.
And then you stepped in at last.
No. I was, you know, we were all beavering away, and I think it was just sort of coming in on a Monday morning with an idea that I initially bounced off Paul and a couple of strategists, and we just immediately went, actually, that's quite powerful. You know, it was kind of one of those where you go, okay, that's quite good. You know, so then when we debriefed the team, they got very excited very quickly around it. So there was a lot of uptake around that core idea. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, I'm still doing it sometimes. Got to keep your hand in.
Well, we don't have that long left in the chat, so let's go to a few sort of rapid fire questions. Your advice to other people starting an agency: what's the magic formula? What do you need when you start?
People you like to hang out with, people you respect, people that you can fight with, and then go and have a beer with the following day, and people who love the business.
Yeah, it gets down to chemistry. And great ideas that everybody notices, especially in your initial year. It helps a lot to have, you know, a few core ideas that you may not make a lot of money on, but that everyone on the planet talks about. And that helps the business.
Do you necessarily need really different skills? Because obviously you've got sort of, you know, the money guy, the creative, the planner, and Jamie. Is that essential, or can other formulas work?
Personally, I regard it as essential, although what formula and what combination you want depends purely on the individual. But ultimately, we have found over the years, jokingly or otherwise, because as you probably well know, we're all musicians, ultimately it sounds a bit wanky, but it's a little bit like a band where you want your bass player to be really good at playing the bass. You want your singer to be really good at singing. You want your guitarist to be great at that. You want your drummer to be great at that. You want them all to be absolute experts in their key fields, and you want them all to be able to work with everybody else perfectly. So in the end, I think there's a lot to be said for core competencies, but you cannot, you have to give almost 50% of that core competency to the partnership and the chemistry between those people. That's what creates, a great agency.
What other agencies do you both respect?
Too many to mention. I mean, you know, RGA, Dragger 5, I mean, you know, Clem's Melbourne at the moment with Ant, just doing brilliantly. There's a lot of good shops out there. Hence, you know, we've got to pull our socks up.
Paul, who do you fear on the pitch list?
Who do I fear? Well, I'll tell you what, we've beaten most agencies around town, but we've never, ironically, beaten MNC Saatchi. We've probably pitched them over in the 16 years that we've been going. We've pitched against them 5 times, we've never beaten them. There's got to be a first time. Yeah. Tom, we're coming.
And finally, what next for BW this year or further into the future? What's coming next?
Well, we're sort of now really hot on the growth curve. You know, we've put on $100 million in the last 18 months with a number of big blue chip clients. So we are through the stage of bedding all of those clients down. We've got some great people working on those businesses and some great work that's tracking well. So we're out to drive continued growth with the business.
And I think there's some, you know, big opportunities creatively for anyone in the world right now. For those who were fortunate enough to be in Cannes and see the Facebook talk last year, even Facebook admit they do not have the answers. So, you know, there's some big opportunities to be had out there. How do you crack the advertising code in FB for a start? So there's some really big worldwide kind of issues going on that are fantastic. If you look at RGA, they've been brilliant at helping Nike develop an ecosystem, something that Apple did just through, you know, product development without quite giving it a name as an ecosystem. So there are some brilliant opportunities, I think, in particular for Australian brands to begin to embrace and strive for. In some cases, that's going to take some brand stretch and things like that. But overall, for us, I mean, personally, you know, we've won, contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, you know, we've won about 38 awards in the last 18 months. And those things include things like, you know, gold Effies at Spike and at Spike's this year. And
Paul has said that he wants two lions this
correct.
Year.
Correct. Yeah, we got a bronze lion last year. I think we've got a good chance at a lion or two this year, particularly with our work for Gigasaurus. Brian, I don't know how many of you saw that particular display at the art exhibition at Bondi Bronte, but a lot of people didn't realise that was a BWM idea to create a dinosaur out of used modems. So things like that, I think, in the innovation categories can have a very powerful effect. So we've got some great work. So, you know, the idea for us, I think, this year is to take that 38 awards won in the last 18 months and improve on that, and improve on it in fresh ways, like that's, which is why I mentioned Gigasaurus.
And Paul, a business win or two in the pipeline as well.
Yep, we're awaiting a automotive announcement, and another one I can't talk about, but things have got off to a good start.
Well, I think we are about out of time, so that is where we'll leave it. The Google Hangout today was sponsored by Eardrum. Thank you to Eardrum. And thank you to the principals of BWM, Rob and Paul. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Mumbrella Cast, which was sponsored by Eardrum. You heard Paul Williams and Rob Belgiovanni from BWM. Please join us next week.